Hello and welcome to Media Geek. This is your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Paul Risonel, and I'm your host. On today's program, speed matters, especially when it comes to broadband internet. The Communication Workers of America has been measuring the speed of internet to our home and has a report telling us both the good and the bad. We'll be hearing from Annie Hill, Executive Vice President of the CWA, who will tell us more. Do stay tuned. Well, broadband internet and the speed that we get at home and in the wireless mobile space is something we talk about quite a bit here in Media Geek. For all of the great things the internet has brought us and the barriers it has brought down in our ability to communicate and share, especially to become our own broadcaster, our own publisher, to allow independent musicians to get their music out there, it all depends on that little wire coming into our home. And the faster it is, the more we can share, but there can be blockades. We've talked about network neutrality and the issue that we should be able to share anything we like, that our ISP, our internet service provider, should not be able to discriminate on the types of things that we're uploading to the world. And very often, the amount that we can download is significantly faster than what we can upload. But even so, as we move forward into this new high-definition world, we need more speed to get truly good video, to see what maybe other people are seeing, get good audio, and to truly experience the type of internet really that they have in other countries. So where are we? We keep hearing that the United States is falling behind. Well, the Communication Workers of America, an AFL-CIO affiliated union that represents the very men and women who are out there working on your telephone, DSL, and cable lines, has been investigating. I recently spoke to Annie Hill, Executive Vice President of the CWA, who tells us more about their investigation.
This is the third Speed Matters report that Communications Workers of America has put out. Our first one, obviously, was in 2007. And what we found is that there has been some improvement from 3.5 megabits per second to 5.1. But when you compare us with the rest of the world, we still have a long ways to go. South Korea, which is currently has the fastest speeds, is four times faster than the United States, and we rank 28th in the world in internet speeds.
When you talk about this, the speed that you mentioned, is that an average rate of what people get?
It's an average rate, yes.
And why is the CWA in particular concerned about this?
So we're interested. Obviously, it's work that many of our members that work in our telecommunications sector do, and we want to make sure that there continues to be jobs for them into the future. So we're concerned about that we stay on top of the newest technology, and we're very concerned about the impact to our country, because you need to have good technology, good strong internet access and speeds to it supports good economic growth. It's important in education. It's important in medicine and many other things. So it's very important on many fronts.
What sort of action is the CWA encouraging besides just releasing a report and letting people know what the current circumstance is?
Yeah, so CWA is, obviously, we've put this report out three times. We're still encouraging. We have more people every year that take the speed test, which people can do by going to the website, speedmatters.org. And what we've really pushed for, which other countries have had, is a national broadband policy. And we're pleased to acknowledge this year that President Obama and the Congress have called upon the FCC to put together such a plan, which is our understanding will be put out next spring. We actually produce results for each of the states and rank them and have their speeds from this year and last year. So Illinois, for example, actually ranks 14th at 6.3, a little bit down from last year, which they were 12th, but their speed actually increased from 5.2 to 6.3.
Are there any states which are leading the country in their internet access?
Yes, most of them would be in the Northeast. So Delaware is number one at 9.9 megabits per second. Number two is Rhode Island at 9.7. Three is New Hampshire. So a lot of those northeastern states. And our theory is on why that happens is those are very densely populated states. And so from an investment strategy, if you were a business, it would make sense to go where there's a lot of people when you put your product in, that there's a lot of people that are going to be available to buy it. So obviously, if that was the only decision point that you were using, it would certainly make sense to put it in a Delaware or a Rhode Island versus a Wyoming or a Montana. But again, we want to make sure that everyone has access. If you go back years ago, when the telephone service was being built in this country, our government made a decision back then that every American should have access to telephone service. And so they created, as part of a way to fund that and make up the difference, and subsidize especially rural areas, the Universal Service Fund, which still exists today and it's still being funded. And so we think that's one of the things that needs to be looked at and potentially diverted to help build out more high-speed internet, because we don't think anyone should be disadvantaged based on where they live.
So you're saying that possibly the Universal Service Fund, which currently exists, could be used now to help build out on high-speed internet?
Yes, that would be one option, absolutely.
Is there a target in terms of speed and total penetration nationwide that you're shooting for or that you're recommending?
We haven't, because our speed tests we've had more every year, but I wouldn't, while it's a source of good information, we think what really needs to have happen as before you talk about a goal for penetration would be that you have to have comprehensive mapping done. And that's one of the things that we're pushing with the FCC. As far as speed, one of our initial goal would be to have the average come up to 10 megabytes per second for download and 1 megabit per second for upload. In Japan, for example, we see speeds as high, and it's tending to be sort of the global standard is people aiming for 100 megabits per second. But we think that we, you know, need to get there incrementally, and we just need to pick up the pace and make sure there's a plan. If we stayed on the current pace, where while there's been some improvements, it would take us 15 years to catch up with South Korea, which is currently at 20 megabits per second.
And another question I have is regarding what is CWA's position on network neutrality, since a lot of folks connect up both network neutrality and having a stronger broadband infrastructure?
Yeah, we're very much for an open internet, and we want to protect free speech on the internet so people can go where they want and download or upload what they want on the internet. We don't think that there should be any unreasonable blocking of access to any websites.
Is the CWA in support of this being enshrined in law or policy?
Within what the FCC does?
Within what the FCC does, or there is currently a bill in Congress, the Internet Freedom Act?
Yes, well, we would support a policy that would support our positions on net neutrality, as long as it has an open internet.
That was Annie Hill, Executive Vice President of the Communication Workers of America, discussing their new report, Speed Matters. And you can check out your internet speed and find out exactly how much speed you're getting at speedmatters.org. And the reason I asked Ms. Hill about the union's position on network neutrality is that when the first network neutrality bill, the Internet Freedom Preservation Act was first entered into Congress back in 2007, the CWA came out against it. By many analysts' measure, the reason why the union took that particular line is because, well, their bosses, the major telecom companies and internet service providers, were all coming out against and very strongly against enshrining network neutrality in law. And we're making the very loud case that any such network neutrality regulation would seriously inhibit the growth of broadband in this country, which obviously is something which the CWA is looking to have happen, both for the help that it offers to the country as a whole and because the communication workers themselves would benefit from additional broadband rollout. There would be more jobs and more hours for them. That's why I asked. We didn't really have enough time to get into it. It was a very short interview. It was sort of a virtual press junket, which many organizations will do, in which reporters and radio hosts each get 10-minute windows to speak with a representative regarding their findings and such. So there wasn't really time to get into a strong question and answer. And, of course, the call was not about network neutrality. So I'm left with more questions and answers about where the CWA will come down on this particular issue. I'm Art Brodsky of the public interest group Public Knowledge, noted a couple of years ago very publicly that it'll be very important for network neutrality advocates to get the unions on board, especially Communication Workers of America, and to help make the case that a free internet is enshrined in law is indeed good for the country, may indeed be good for the workers, and may actually not inhibit broadband development, as the ISPs would have us believe, but might in fact help spur use of internet, might spur people's desire to have greater bandwidth, and spur people to want to have multi tens and hundreds of megabits so that they can actively share what they make, causing them to buy more broadband services, which would then require more rollout. We will see. And you are listening to Media Geek. This is your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. Check out Media Geek online at MediaGeek.net. It's home to the Media Geek blog and the radio shows at Radio.MediaGeek.net, where you can download it, listen in your browser, or subscribe to the podcast. And the Twitter feed is Twitter.com/MediaGeek. If you have any comments to the program, I'd love to hear them. Paul@MediaGeek.net is the email address. And, you know, if you're telling me something that you want me to say on air, if you want to make comments about anything you hear in the program, and I'd like to share them. I'd like to make this as much of an open forum as we can. You can also do that by Twitter, twitter.com/MediaGeek. And I often put up a question of the week a day or so in advance. This week the question is, do you think the FCC should be looking at wireless market? Apropos some news items coming up in a moment. And if you have a comment about it, and even if you want to comment for next week, that's great. Twitter.com/MediaGeek. Now, just 2 months into his new job as FCC chairman, Julius Genachowski is starting to make the rounds to let the public in on some of his regulatory priorities. Just a few weeks after the Internet Freedom Preservation Act was introduced into Congress, Genachowski told TheHill.com that under his watch, the commission publicly will support network neutrality principles, promising to go after any Internet service providers that violate them. Last year, the FCC took disciplinary action against Comcast for interfering with its customers' Internet traffic, a decision which the cable giant is currently fighting in court. According to Chairman Genachowski, the agency's general counsel is working on legal strategies to defend the open internet principles already enumerated by the commission. Odds are that Genachowski will find a fair degree of support from the Democratic Congress, which is in recess right now. The most effective help would probably be passage of the Internet Freedom Preservation Act, although the chairman has declined to voice specific support for any particular legislation. The Internet Freedom Preservation Act was entered into Congress just before the recess, so it really hasn't seen any action yet at all. Jenikowski also commented on access to wireless networks and handset exclusivity. In an interview with Congress Daily, the chairman said, quote, if you live in some part of the country where you don't have access to a company that has an exclusive relationship with a smartphone provider, you just can't get one, end quote. He went on to say that, quote, the complete lack of access, end quote, is a critical issue for the FCC to explore. And explore they will. At the commission's August 27th meeting, all five commissioners approved a notice of inquiry looking into the U.S. wireless industry. Handset and device exclusivity, as well as the device-specific application stores like Apple's iPhone app stores, are likely targets for scrutiny, as is the overall competitiveness of the U.S. wireless communications market. And in fact, to really hear it explained, let's go right now to some audio from the August 27th Commission meeting, where Mr. Schlichting of the Wireless Bureau will tell us more about this notice of inquiry.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and Commissioners. Mr. Chairman, you have charged the Wireless Bureau with obtaining the facts and developing the analytical framework needed for recommendations to the Commission that will do the following. First, enable the United States to lead the world in mobile communications. And second, support wireless communications as an enduring engine for long-term economic growth. The notices of inquiry that you have before you today are early steps in furtherance of those goals. The Wireless Innovation and Investment NOI and the Mobile Wireless Competition NOI are two sides of the same coin. We know that competition drives innovation and investment. It forces companies to continue to develop new approaches and to make investments for future growth. We know that innovation drives competition, as smart ideas and entrepreneurial spirit enables new entrants. In order to achieve these goals, innovation, investment, and competition, we need facts and we need sound analysis. That's why both these NOIs are full of questions. We, of course, are hoping for answers that will build the Commission's knowledge base and help us formulate coherent analytical frameworks. The first item addresses wireless innovation and investment. As reflected in the cross-bureau team at the table this morning, this is very much a joint item of the Office of Engineering Technology and the Wireless Bureau. Representing the Wireless Bureau staff are Joel Taubenblatt, Deputy Chief, and Peter Trachtenberg, a Senior Attorney in the Spectrum and Competition Policy Division. Joel will present the item. Thank you.
The NOI asks comment or seeks comment with respect to certain overarching issues to allow us to gain a better understanding of the state of innovation and what role the Commission can play to drive it forward. In particular, and for example, the NOI asks questions about what metrics and data sources we should be considering when we think about innovation and investment in the wireless sector, how to compare the United States with other countries in terms of innovation, and what high-level trends are taking place in the wireless ecosystem that we should focus on and track over time. The provision of innovative wireless services and products is critically dependent on access to spectrum. That's why the NOI seeks comment on developments in the use and availability of spectrum that are happening in the wireless ecosystem and that the Commission should focus on in determining what role to play. For example, the NOI asks questions about what methods we should use to potentially repurpose spectrum for new uses. It asks questions about how to further access to spectrum, how to develop models that will further those access, how to find new ways to better manage interference protection, and how to develop enhanced methods and new ways to use spectrum more efficiently. Innovation is also occurring in a number of other areas in the wireless ecosystem. For example, wireless networks are evolving to more IP-based and converged platform architectures. Wireless devices are used for multifunctions, such as smartphones, and new sophisticated applications for things like location-based services and video streaming are being developed as well. The NOI seeks comment on what's going on in these areas and what role the Commission might play in further encouraging innovation and investment in these areas, as well as in wireless business practices and models. In addition, the NOI seeks comment on ways that the Commission can further experimentation in the wireless sector, particularly with respect to the FCC's experimental licensing program. The Wireless Bureau and OET recommends adoption of this item and requests editorial privileges. Thank you.
And that's Joel Taubin-Blatt, who's with the FCC's Wireless Bureau. He's Deputy Bureau Chief, and Senior Deputy Bureau Chief Jim Schlichting did the introduction in there, talking about this notice of inquiry, which is the FCC seeking input on how it will look at the U.S. wireless and mobile communications market. Well, then, and that was from the FCC's monthly meeting, public meeting, which was on August 27th. Of course, then, each commissioner has an opportunity to make some comments. We go now to comments made by Commissioner Michael Copps, the senior Democrat on the Federal Communications Commission.
The notices we are adopting today lay the groundwork for sound public policy making. They seek to protect consumers in three ways: by searching out new ways for the Commission to facilitate wireless innovation and investment, by improving our ability to promote wireless competition, and by ensuring that consumers of wireless and other services have the information they need in order to make intelligent choices for themselves and their families. We begin with innovation. More even than the dramatic technology advances of the 20th century, the 21st will be about stunning and transformative innovations. Wireless technologies have already empowered consumers in ways unimaginable just a few short years ago. Those first seemingly magical devices that carried our voices hither and yon, at least when everything was working well, are now evolving into robust mobile computers. The wireless industry deserves recognition and credit for how much it has accomplished. But mark me down as one who believes we have only glimpsed the beginning. Much more is coming. How much more depends in significant measure on our country's success in encouraging wireless innovation. There should be no doubt that facilitating further innovation in wireless technologies and services is absolutely crucial to our nation's prosperity and well-being in the digital age. We look to industry for much of that, but visionary public policy should always be the handmaiden of private enterprise. That's how we grew this country. And now, once again, we must learn to harness all of our national resources for innovation and for growth.
That is Commissioner Michael Copps, Democrat on the Federal Communications Commission, clearly advocating that the FCC be a handmaiden to private industry with regard to the future of wireless and mobile communications innovation. Next, we'll hear from Republican Robert McDowell, the senior Republican on the Federal Communications Commission, who strikes a slightly different chord from Mr. Copps.
As our inquiry acknowledges, the Commission's policies in the wireless sector have helped encourage and enable the innovation that defines today's wireless marketplace. Likewise, policies that fostered continued innovation have spurred capital investment in wireless and brought advanced services to American consumers. Furthermore, the wireless market appears to be robustly competitive, with 51% of consumers having a choice of five wireless providers and about 94% having a choice of four. At the same time, more competition is coming over the horizon with the build-out of the 700 megahertz band, as well as AWS-1 and hopefully white spaces technologies as we continue to work on that, plus many, many more areas. Prices have been coming down while functionality and innovation and choice have been going up. As a result, wireless technology has penetrated broadly and quickly across America. Even at present, in the midst of the worst economy in decades, an economy that seems only to shrink at times, the communications sector, which includes wireless technologies and services, intends to plow as much as $80 billion this year alone into capital expenditures that are making broadband services faster, more available, and more affordable. Few, if any, sectors can make such a claim. In fact, I think no other sector in our economy can make such a claim. In short, the phenomenal success of the wireless sector shows how well a light regulatory touch works. While today we unanimously support the Commission seeking to develop a framework for analyzing wireless innovation and the relationship between innovation and investment, where we go from here is not yet clear. But where we have been is clear. The Commission's long-standing policy to allow competitive market forces rather than command and control regulations to foster the development of and investment in wireless networks and services has led to remarkable advances. Thus, I hope that we will proceed with care, mindful that any future action we consider should aim to attract more private investment capital rather than deter it.
And that is Commissioner Robert McDowell, senior Republican at the Federal Communications Commission, speaking at their August 27th open public meeting regarding a notice of inquiry the FCC has unanimously decided to pursue, looking into how they should evaluate and proceed in regulating, or not regulating as the case may be, the wireless and mobile communications market in the United States. And this is Media Geek. Let's look into some more news of our media environment. Chicago's alternative weekly, The Reader, has new owners as of August 25th. The Reader's parent company, Creative Loafing Incorporated, was bought at a bankruptcy auction by New York investment company Atalaya for $5 million. Atalaya already was owed $30 million, which it loaned when Creative Loafing bought The Reader and the Washington City paper in 2007. Creative Loafing went into bankruptcy in 2008, suffering from a downturn in advertising and interest on its debt. Former Creative Loafing CEO Ben Eason attempted to convince the bankruptcy judge that his $2.3 million bid to retain control of the company should be preferred because he and his partners were more experienced and better able then to shepherd the future of the firm's papers. The judge rejected this argument, siding with Atalaya's larger $5 million bid. In addition to The Reader and Washington City paper, Creative Loafing owns alternative weeklies in Charlotte, North Carolina, Sarasota, and Tampa, Florida. The company got its start with the Atlanta-based namesake paper, Creative Loafing, founded by former CEO Eason's parents in 1972. Eason told The Reader's media columnist Michael Miner that The Reader is a profitable paper, claiming that's due to measures his management team took to reduce costs. And largely that was laying people off. He also told Miner that he doesn't regret buying The Reader and the Washington City paper, saying, quote, Creative Loafing with The Reader and the City paper is far stronger than Creative Loafing alone, end quote. And that brings to a close another edition of Media Geek. I'll be back in one more week with more news and views on our media environment. In the meantime, check out Media Geek online at MediaGeek.net. That's home to the Media Geek blog. The radio show is at radio.MediaGeek.net. Subscribe to the podcast, download, or listen right there in your browser, radio.MediaGeek.net. If you have any comments about the program, please send it to me, paul@MediaGeek.net. The Twitter feed is at twitter.com/MediaGeek. And check out my group blog on radio, all about the future of radio and tough love for the medium. My co-bloggers, Jennifer Waite of SpinningIndie.com and Matthew Lassar, media historian and writer for ArsTechnica.com. It's RadioSurvivor.com. And Media Geek is heard on great community stations all around North America, like WVEW in Brattleboro, Vermont, WBCR in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, and CHMA in Sackville, New Brunswick, Canada. Media Geek is produced live in the studios of WNUR-FM in Evanston, Illinois, on the campus of Northwestern University and got its start at Community Radio WEFT in Champaign, Illinois. Thank you so much for tuning in.